Welcome to the A to the Dan of Football, sponsored by Cook 100 Degree Boiling Hot Water, straight from your kitchen tap. Mine also does chilled filtered water and chilled sparkling water. It's truly magnificent. If it is your first time listening, welcome to our growing community. This is a football podcast. It's about the culture of the game and it's for the fans. We don't really deal in the Arsenal back four or the false nine, though we might do the false nine next week because it's the letter F. Each week we take a letter of the alphabet and this week the letter is E. Joining me on this podcast is Derby County fan and the only plural human I've met, Blake Fellows. He's here to stop me saying football was better in the 80s, though secretly he knows it is. Right, Blake?
I don't care how much you try and convince me. It just wasn't.
All right. Well, listen, before we get on and talk about Derby County, that tweet, we've got to talk about that tweet. So I was doing my other podcast, Dear Lovejoy, and I put out on Twitter for people to send in problems, as I always do for the Dear Lovejoy podcast. And Blake thought he'd be cocky. And he wrote, hi, Tim. This is from his account, Talk Derby Pod. Blake's got his own podcast all about Derby County Football Club. Very good. He gets a lot of good guests on that. Anyway, it says, he said, hi, Tim. I'm a 20-year-old single man who lives with his mum. My only real true love is Derby County. I'm looking to try and lose my virginity in 2021. Any advice, Blake in Derby?
Not backfired.
I tell you what, I woke up the next day because it went down well. This I said, I heard Nottingham is close to you. It's a great city with an urban myth of two women to every one man. Try going there. Good football club too. Best in Europe in 79 and 80. That got, I think, about 1,000 likes and, I don't know, 500 retweets all around the Nottingham community. Absolutely loved it. And I felt so guilty because I always forget I've got loads of football fans on Twitter. And I was having a laugh with you. But I always forget they're just like, they're brutal. Some of them, their replies to you were horrible. And I was like, mate, I'm really sorry. but you thought it was funny, right?
Yeah, I actually quite enjoyed reading through some of the replies. A lot of them involved going to find some sheep in fields or... Try not being a Derby fan or, yeah, people took it very literally, didn't they?
Definitely. Right, Derby County, you were on such a good run and then you went and lost.
Yeah, they lost two over the Christmas period.
And you got COVID or something, haven't you?
Yeah, now all the, yeah, two games lost and now the whole first team squad and Wayne Rooney have had to self-isolate because of COVID. So the training ground is shut down at the minute. So for the FA Cup game against Chorley on Saturday, it's going to be the under-18s and some of the under-23s who have not trained.
That's brilliant though, isn't it? I mean, yeah. that's why we love football. The one thing about the pandemic is it's done exciting things like that. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of cool for you lot to see the kids go out and play in the FA Cup. I feel sorry. Who are you playing, Chorley?
Chorley, yeah.
I feel sorry for them because they'd probably want to play against the first team, wouldn't they? But I mean, it's still going to be a good game, right?
Yeah, it'll be a good game. But Chorley have gone from 11-1 to 5-4 to win. That's incredible.
I just hope they beat you. But I hope it's a good game, like 5-4 or something. But, you know, could be excited. So, yeah, anyway.
Chelsea, you've stolen our manager. we had a brilliant season, entertaining football, got to Wembley, lost, just missed out. It was an exciting time. You came along. You took our manager from us. How's he getting on?
Do you know what? Should we move on? No, is he just he's not doing very well, is he, at the moment? But I want to stay. Do you know what? Last season, everything aligned for him, didn't he? Because he's playing the kids, we're all behind him. This season, he's spoiled for choice. You know, he spent 300 million quid in the middle of a pandemic. He's brought in a load of Germans and everything else. And I mean, some good players there. And honestly, I'm not a football manager. I've never done it. I mean, I've done it from sitting on my sofa a lot. But I've never done it. But I think he should just pick a team and stick with it. And just stick all the others in the resis. And last year, it was really easy just to pick. Yeah, he should just pick Giroud up front because he scores. We know he does. Get Tammy on the bench just for this few weeks. But just keep it. Just keep it. And keep one solid team so they know how to play with each other. Anyway, we said we weren't going to talk. We're building a community. It's about the culture of the game. It's not about it. I want to talk about something else quickly, because it's really been bugging me, because I've noticed it. My all over Christmas, because I had to spend a lot of time on my own, my daughters came over, but because we've now moved into tier four and now lockdown, my mobile phone addiction has gone off the scale again. And what I've noticed, though, is with when watching football, I'm unless the game grabs me, and I know there'll be other people out there, you know, I know you're all going to pretend you watch all 90 minutes, but suddenly you get drawn to your phone. And you're looking at your phone, you're watching a great game or supposedly a box office game. And you look down and it's like 15 minutes of the game gone. You think, I'll have a look, see what's going on Twitter, social media, see what's happening. Next thing you look up, it's nearly half time, because the game just doesn't, it's not grabbing you, and your phone is. This mobile phone addiction is ridiculous. Like sometimes I get to half time and think, shit, I've missed everything. You know, it's like, you know, are you doing that, or are you fine with it all?
My first reaction now is to, if something happens in a game or if there's an incident, I go on and search for it on the Twitter search and see what everyone else is saying about it. And then, like you say, then it's 5 minutes of scrolling.
You then get lost on your phone, don't you?
Yeah.
And I might have said this before to you, but when I first went on Twitter years ago, people used to go, you're not a real fan, you're on Twitter, we're doing the game, what are you doing? Now, if I'm not tweeting about the game, people go, you're not real. Actually, people have got used to me not tweeting about the games, because I just gave up, because there's too many lunatics who just throw abuse at me. It's like, holy shit, mate, this is just horrific, the abuse you're giving me. And it's like, you know, I hate to say it, but it's a game of football, and you're like really getting upset about it, like you've got to go to school the next day, you know, and face your mates. It's mental. We got some mail in. You've got an email there, haven't you?
I certainly have. It's from Nick Finney, who's emailed him before. He sends me quite a few tweets, actually. He's a top man, top football fan. Like, he knows his football, Nick.
Part of the community is our Nick.
Yeah. It's more of a cult than a community, isn't it, I think. But,
well, it is. Let's start that up, yeah.
Hi, Blake and Tim. Listened to episode D a few days back, and a couple of things cropped up in my mind. First of all, Robbie Savage. Do you remember him collapsing to the floor in the 1999 League Cup final after Justin Edinburgh touched his hair in an aggressive manner? I can't remember that.
Yeah, I remember it vividly. Yeah, because Robbie had always talked about, you know, playing to the rule and fair and all that, and he just went down. Yeah, I remember it.
He said, I despised the man for many years due to that. Not only did he fake an injury to get someone sent off, I also ended up in hospital because of it. He got me so wound up over the game that when Spurs scored a last-gasp winner, I shouted so loudly, it caused my appendix to start grumbling. I was in a hospital bed for 2 days and unable to share in the celebrations. He also put on, what was the song that we mentioned? Diamond Lights, was it?
Diamond Lights. Yeah, go on. What did he say?
He said, Tim, I can't believe you struggled to remember that it was these two and not Hoddle and Keegan who sung Diamond Lights.
I didn't think it was Hoddle and Keegan. I thought it was either Kevin Keegan sung it or it was Hoddle and Waddle. And it
That's
was
right.
Hoddle and Waddle. Keegan sung something else. Keegan had a hit single and so did Hoddle and Waddle.
He said, but a lesser known fact is they did a follow up called It's Goodbye.
No idea.
No idea. No. And they just said, keep up the good work, really enjoying the show.
Excellent stuff. Right, Ben Mortimer, he's tweeted in saying, can you talk about foul throws for your F letter? That's next week, F along with a false nine. They seem to be given all the time in the amateur game, but never in top flyer, and you see them in most games. He tweeted in, actually, and then someone else, Neil, tweeted. He said, I used to be an amateur ref. He'd seen this tweet. He said, I used to be an amateur ref, but asked this question to a very senior ref I met, and the directive is in the Premier League that refs don't give foul throws unless they're so obvious they have to, as they don't want throw-ins being taken all the time. I imagine that's probably a good rule, because we don't want people to keep stopping with the throw-ins, do we? Does it really matter how much the ball goes in? If you want to look at cheating, do you call it cheating and people getting away with the rules? Go to the NBA and watch basketball. I mean, there's a thing called a double dribble, which is you dribble. If you pick the ball up, you're not allowed to dribble again. If you're LeBron James, you're allowed to do that. Michael Jordan was allowed to do that. There's a thing called traveling as well. You're only allowed to take two steps before you put the ball in the basket. Some of them are taking like three or four or five steps. It's ludicrous what they do in the NBA, but the big stars, you're not allowed to touch, you're not allowed to go with them, so they protect them. I think that's stupid. But with this refereeing, I think if they keep stopping the game for foul throws, no one really gives a damn. I mean, we're going to end up, didn't Danny Cowley say, we're going to end up having kick-ins anyway.
kick-ins, yeah. But it's the same as if you give a penalty every time someone touched someone's shirt in the box, there'd be 15 penalties every game, wouldn't they?
Bloody do, Blake. That's the problem. It's driving me absolutely nuts. The other day, there was, what match was it? United, where Pogba tripped himself up. Because there was contact. It was like, that was a pen. And the sad thing is, I'm going, how is that a pen on my WhatsApp group, my mates? And they're all looking, they're also replying to me like I'm mental because they've all bought into the idea any single bit of contact at all is a sodding penalty. Don't get me started. It was better in the 80s. Right. So we also had a poll last week, which was, oh, actually, it was this, isn't it? Do you have the right to go down if touching the box? Yes, 32%. No, 52%. And don't care was 16%. Just a couple here. Cole says, define touch. Every player has the right to go down when the contact is enough to warrant a foul, but not if it's just the case for touch. That's it, Cole. But even the commentators are going, get down, get a pen. And then someone else, who is this? Who said, I want to name check people. Oh, sorry, that was Neil. And Cole says, no, but all the time officials don't have the bottle to give a penalty unless you go to ground. It will continue they will continue to collapse like they've been shot. A lot of people blame the refs on that, saying because the refs don't do it, the players have to go down. I don't know. It's such a mess now, isn't it? We've got ourselves into this situation. I mean, when I was on Soccer M, I remember seeing this happening, and we did an item called Why. Do you remember the poster, the Vietnam?
Yes, yeah.
We used to turn it into that because players used to just go down for no reason, and we used to do that. And the other one I used to do, which I loved, was it was called It's a Miracle, where players used to go down and then the play would carry on and they used to get up and run and we used to
play the music, yeah.
Yeah, we'd put a light beam on them going, it's a miracle they got up there, they're rolling around injured and stuff like that. And I think that's how we have to beat it, is with humour. You know, people have got, the ex-pros have to start laughing at players for going down. The problem is it's such a big part of the game now, as we discussed on the other the podcast the other day, you win a penalty and you win a foul. Now it's been thought of as something you win, and it's been, you know, redesigned, rebranded, then people keep doing it. Let's get on with our letters, shall we? Otherwise we'll run out of time. Starting with E, what's your first E?
El Clasico.
Wow.
What a one to start with. El Clasico. The right, biggest game in the world, potentially? The biggest game in the world?
Tell me more about it and then I'll tell you what I think.
Well, I was going to ask you a little question, actually, before we got onto it. Who do you think's won more El Clasico matches?
I'll go Real Madrid.
Yeah, but it's actually 97-96 to Real Madrid.
Wow, that's incredible. Who do you support in it? That's the important one.
Barca. But what? I don't know why. I think I went to Tenerife when I was about 13 and had that lime green Ronaldinho shirt. And there's no political allegiance or family in Catalan. I've just always preferred Barcelona.
So I've always gone for Real Madrid. And let's get away from politics, because I don't understand anything about politics in Spain, really. A little bit, but not much. But I went because McManaman played over there. And I used to go and see him over there. And Beckham played there. And I did the documentary on Beckham. And I ended up out there watching Real Madrid play. And Zidane played for them as well. And so it was like such a fantastic thing to watch him. So it's just, I kind of always supported Real Madrid in what was going on there. So yeah, that's really close though, isn't it? But the biggest game in football, I looked this up because I knew you were going to do El Clasico. So I looked up because there was always this big thing, the biggest game in club football is Liverpool versus Man United. And then other people say it's El Clasico. Now in 2015, they did some stats on it. 200 different countries across the globe watched Liverpool United rather than 50 countries watched El Clasico. And Liverpool versus United at Anfield, this 2015, I think, was watched by approximately 700 million people worldwide, in contrast to 400 to 500 million who watched El Clasico. So it absolutely dominated it. But there's been no one updated that, really. I know from working at Sky Sports and BT Sports, Man United are the biggest club. But they're like, when it comes to viewing ratings, they just swamp everyone. Liverpool are close, but it's basically United. If United are playing in Europe, the ratings are absolutely huge. And then Liverpool probably, then probably Arsenal and Spurs. You know, Chelsea are quite far down in that. Maybe, no, Spurs and Chelsea are probably the same. It's Arsenal probably next. Anyway, I'm not sure where City stand actually now, but now City have come into it. I think that the Liverpool-Manchester thing and City are better than Liverpool. So I don't know what's happened to it. So I don't know what is the biggest game, but, you know, there's only one way to find out, isn't there, Blake? Let's put it to a poll. So what do you think it is, by the way, whilst I'm writing this? So A to Z podcast, what is the biggest game in club football? What do you think it is?
I think El Clasico, but...
Why? How many S's in Clasico? Because I've always spelled this wrong. It's one, isn't it?
It's one S, yeah. And but yeah, because people always say it's the El Clasico, which is like saying the Clasico, because El Clasico is the classic in Spanish, isn't it? But just look at...
bilingual over there.
I watched a short documentary about it earlier because I knew we were going to be doing it. I just think when you look at the players that have played against each other over the years, and they're the two biggest clubs over there that are constantly, or almost constantly, one and two. It's similar to the Celtic Rangers relationship, isn't it? That it's whoever gets the better of each other between them is basically champions.
Doesn't that make it terrible, though, that they're always one and two? I mean, don't we think that's bad?
Like, yeah, I think it's bad, but it adds to the game, doesn't
Chelsea
it?
Chelsea and Arsenal and everyone else would compete for the league. Leicester City have just... I know British football is what... Well, sorry, English football is watched by more people than anybody else, more countries than anybody else, sold to more countries than it. And we've done it on this podcast. It's got the highest TV revenue. All right, I'll put that as a poll. You think El Clasico will win? I think El Clasico might win this because people don't want to say... Liverpool and United. Shall I go on to my next E?
Yes,
my next E you're going to love. It's emotions. E for emotions. And it's an emotional game. And what I've done is I've got the top five emotions in sport ever as chosen by me. So, not sport, sorry, football. So these are my top five. And I thought long and hard all of about 10 minutes. Literally these five came into my mind, right? So I'm going to do them in order. Number five, it's a bit of a left field one, is David Pleat and his funny run at Main Road in his brown suit in 1983. It was the 80s, Blake, and football was great in the 80s. Do you won't remember it because you weren't even born, I don't think, but do you know this bit of footage, right? Because Luton were playing City, first division. There was 8 minutes to go. David Pleat was the manager of Luton, sending Raddy Antich, I think his name was, and he went on, and then he scored. And City only needed a draw, Luton needed to win. And he scored to keep him up, and David Pleat was so happy that he ran across the pitch, and he started, I'm doing it with his hands. Yeah, you do remember it, his hands in the air, and he was jumping. And I love that. I always thought that was great. But at number four, we've got Ketch Bayer playing for your Newcastle. He scored a goal. I think it's 98, and then he started beating up the advertising hoardings. Do you remember him, the bald-headed guy playing for Newcastle? And what happened, he was playing against Bolton, and he'd been put on the bench, and Shearer was on the bench as well. How can you put Shearer on the bench? That's weird. Dalglish was the gaffer at the time, and he sent on Shearer ahead of him. Shearer set up Ketch Bayer, scored a great goal. And when Shearer was interviewed afterwards, he says things like, no idea what was going on, but you know, he's a special case. He's like this old Ketch Bayer. Number three, I've got Gazza crying. That's only made it to number three of me. Italy 90, semi final against West Germany. He did that lunge, didn't he? And he was just overexcited. He was playing so well, and the yellow card would have meant he'd missed the final. We didn't get to the final anyway, and he started crying on the pitch, and we all loved him for it. And that was when Lineker turned around and did the eye thing over at the bench. Number two, I've got Kevin Keegan. I would love it, 96, beating Leeds. I'm going to tell you what he said. No, when you do that with footballers, like he said about Leeds, and when you do things like that about a man like Stuart Pearce, I've kept really quiet. This is not English, by the way. This is what I've always loved about it. And his grammar's all over the place. Right? When you do things like that about a man like Stuart Pearce, I've kept really quiet. But I tell you something, he went down in my estimation when he said that. We've not resorted to that. But I tell you, you can tell him now, if you're watching it, we're still fighting for this title. And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it. That was a brilliant moment. I truly love that. And I really want that Newcastle team was one of the best teams ever to watch. I thoroughly enjoyed watching them constantly. My number one is Eric Cantona, though, for emotions. Eric Cantona jumping into the crowd, and it's E as well, another E for Eric Cantona. So I double up on this one. Jumping into the crowd to fight the Crystal Palace fan. It's 26 years ago. He'd been sent off for kicking Richard Shaw. The guy in the crowd became famous. His name was Matthew Simmons. He said, "Fuck off back to France, you French motherfucker." I don't know why I'm laughing at that, but it just amused me. And Cantona jumped into the crowd and Kung Fu kicked him. What was brilliant, because Cantona was one of the greatest players we've ever seen in the Premier League. Scored 82 goals for Manchester United. He won 4 league titles, 2 doubles. But when he was asked what was the highlight of his career at Man United, he said, "Best moment? I have a lot of good moments, but the one I prefer is when I kick the hooligan." You got to love him for that. That was my number one. So, you know, I know we're laughing now, but at the time it was so shocking that he went in the crowd and did that when he was being sent off. What's your, have you got any good emotion ones?
My emotion one's a bit more of a serious one.
I'll bring the podcast down. Why don't you go on? What is it?
No, it was, the most emotional I felt watching a football match was Billy Sharp's goal for Doncaster against Middlesbrough when he'd lost his son the day before, I think, and he decided still to play and scored for it. Won goal of the year in 2011 and scored from, I mean, he had no right to shoot from where he was. It's like it was meant to be this goal. And then he unveiled the "That's for you, son," and all of that. And that was, I remember watching that on Sky Sports News and being very, very like emotional and talking to my friends about it. And we're all a bit like, but that was and that was football for me. I thought
that's when football's great, isn't it?
Yeah, that is football. Yeah. Fair play to him. And he was despised by the Derby fans at times. He played for Forest and he always used to have a bit of stick and give a bit with Derby. And I remember all the Derby fans at the time just like, that's incredible. That is football.
There's nothing like football for those sort of emotions. I'll tell you why. It's because it's so hard to score a goal. So if you score one, it feels amazing, you know, unless you're 5-0 down and then it feels like it's pointless. Right, what's your next E?
The easy chant, which again was a massive part of my teenage years. Yeah, a massive part of my teenage years going to football. If any time we scored, the whole of the east stand corner, another E where I stood at Pride Park, it'd always be easy, easy. And that was, again, one of a Soccer AM creation.
It's funny when things like that made it from TV onto, I mean, Soccer AM was like, I've done a few articles about this. It's the perfect storm because, you know, it's hard because I did 11 years of it, but there was just certain moments which captured people's imaginations. And it was just a group of lads who were sitting there just trying to come up with ideas. I literally don't remember how the wrestlers started, but Fenners was definitely involved in it, who presents Soccer AM now. And I think it might have been his idea even. And everyone was coming up with ideas. That was a great thing about Soccer AM. And I remember they just used to go everywhere and Fenners used to go, "It wasn't a punch, it was the flat of the hand. It wasn't a punch." I think because we used to talk about wrestling and how mental it was over here because it was so shit in comparison to the American one. And we'd all ended up watching it as kids, like Haystacks and Big Daddy and that crap, Catweasel. And I think it was something to do. And we just did a sketch one day and it carried on going. And they used to go all around the place. And it was the easy, easy chant. And then the crowds just, you know, everyone just took it on. And it just, I'd forgotten all about it, really. I forget about so much the stuff that happened on Soccer AM because it was 11 years. So that show was 4 hours a week at one stage. It then went down to 3 because we were just like, it was mental. And it was like for 11 years, 42 weeks of a year. It was just, there was so much stuff we put on that. My next E is Elland Road, right? Got to say, great stadium. I remember going there a couple of times with Chelsea because it's a big derby for us. 100 years old last year, Elland Road. And it's a great place to go, as I say. I was reading up on it, actually. In 1982, they sold it to the council or something, the local authorities or something, and they had all these mad ideas. I sort of vaguely remember this because at one stage they were thinking about putting a water park in there. Can you imagine having a load of football fans in the water park beforehand? But the reason why I love Elland Road so much and I always think about it is for a while they were sponsored by Lurpak. And as you looked through that again, sorry, it's another Soccer AM thing here. But as you looked up the stand, on the stairs, there was Lurpak written on the stairs. And what one day, I think it was Neil in the office, came and like in our ideas meeting, went, have you noticed that Leeds have got Lerpak? They've got butter on their stairs. Surely that's a health and safety issue, right? That amused me so much. I was like, come on, phone up Elm Road, get a quote, and then phone up the Premier League, find out what they're doing about it. And what was so brilliant is the Premier League was so used to us phoning up with this crap, and so were the FA and everybody else, that they just used to go, yeah, and then they give us this real nondescript sort of, answer always. They just play along with it. It was really funny. But we'd be on the show going, something's got to be done about that. There's butter all over the stairs at Elm Road, Lerpak everywhere, someone's going to fall over. And I loved it. And now, you know, I'm not saying soccer and there's great other great football shows, but where's that fun in football at the moment? Do you know what I mean? Like fantasy football had a lot of fun as well. Fantasy football, that'd be on next week's show. But yeah, good times. And it just sort of reminded me of that thing that we used to do, which was just because I'd watched it on Friends one day. Cheers. The two guys that sit in the bar, can't remember their names now. And one goes to the other one, goes, why don't more men send flowers? And he went, what? Mormons don't send flowers. I don't know. Why don't Mormons send flowers? So every year on Soccer M, I'd get someone to phone up the Church of Mormons in London, wherever it is, and say, why don't Valentine's Day, every year with that film, why don't Mormons send flowers? And they go, they do send it. I said, no, because women are always saying, why don't Mormons send flowers? I mean, why don't they send more flowers? And every year we used to go, who's doing it? And everyone sit there and go, oh, do I have to, really? it was so worth it for the gag, but no one wanted to do it. Why don't Mormons send flowers? What's your next D?
Encroachment.
Oh, I like it.
As a fully paid up member of the Goalkeepers Union, this is one of the things.
Well, why didn't you play football? Why did you go in there?
That gag will never get old, will it? I'm going to turn into Tim Lovejoy for a second here, if you allow me to do so.
A handsome legend.
This is one of the things about modern football that was better in the 80s.
Well, yes. Come on, the 80s. What happened?
Goalkeepers, it is impossible to save a penalty without moving forward off your line. So VAR pulling back penalties and referees pulling goalkeepers up for being slightly off the line, moving forward, encroaching towards the penalty taker, I think is the most absurd, ridiculous rule. It's up there with people being punished for jumping with your arms up. You can't jump like that. You can't save a penalty without going forwards. The encroachment rule on the side of the goalkeepers, I think, is insane. Genuinely, it's impossible.
I've never known why they don't introduce that thing that they did in the American Soccer League, whatever that was called, where George Best and Rodney Marsh and that lot played, New York Cosmos and those guys. What they did, instead of having penalties, because they could never have a game end 0-0, they used to have players run from the centre spot, and then they take on the keeper one-on-one. And they do that in hockey. I watched that in Olympics. So they do it in hockey. And I don't know why we can't do that, because it's quite good fun watching players have to run with the ball and take players on and either go early, chip them, or try and take it round the keeper. Maybe they don't do it because it's too easy. I don't know. If anyone could let us know, then let us know. So, anyway, you know, by the way, if anyone ever wants to join in with this, please do. We want to hear from you. Just tweet us at Tim Lovejoy. It would be a great way of doing it. So, Blake, my next E is, it's brilliant. You're going to love this one. Elton John. Yes, probably the greatest chairman there's ever been in football. Lifelong Watford supporter, Elton John became club chairman in 1976. I was trying to find out how much he bought Watford for, but I can't find it out. But his ambition was to take Watford to the first division. And in 1983, they came runners-up to Liverpool in top-flight football. Along the way, amazing cup runs. And, what he did to Watford Football Club was absolutely incredible. Obviously, brought in Graham Taylor. I thought on this show today, we'd find out someone who actually knows more about it than a lot of people. Someone who actually played under the Elton John regime. Nigel Callaghan, welcome to the podcast, Nigel.
Hi, mate. I've just lost you. Oh, there we go. I switched something off and I lost you. How you doing?
Yeah, really, really good. Have you any idea how much he bought Watford for?
I thought I think he was £1 million he invested into it when he came. That's all I can remember about it. They'd actually put £1 million into the club, which was a hell of a lot of money in them days.
So what happened to your career then? How did you end up at Watford?
Well, I was at Watford before Elton and Graham Taylor came. Dave Butler was taking the youth team, and I was probably about 11 years old then. And I'd only been there for a short time, and then obviously the news came in that Elton was buying the club, and then he brought this manager in called Graham Taylor, who I'd never heard of. And Graham sort of like more or less changed the club around completely. He then brought in a trainer called Tom Wally, and Tom took over the youth academy. And it just went from there, really. I went through the schoolboy period and just grew up with the club and went from school as an apprentice and made it into the pro set.
One of the things that Watford did, which was really good, you mentioned Tom Wally there, he came to our school. Watford used to send people to the schools constantly to get the club name there. They used to give tickets out constantly. They used to try and get people to the club. My dad used to take me and my brother up to Watford, and we were in the fourth division. You could walk all the way around Vicarage Road back then. It was amazing. But suddenly the whole thing just took off, didn't it? It was like absolutely amazing. You and John Barnes and Luther Blissett, Ross Jenkins. Great days.
Yeah, it was the one thing Graham Taylor did was he'd give young players a chance. And a lot of the credit has to go down to Tom Wally because he brought us through, and he sort of let Graham Taylor know how good we was, and he thought we was ready for the first team. And everybody that was involved with the youth team at Watford, they'd be very unlucky if they never had a chance of playing the first team, because Graham Taylor always used to give you the chance to prove yourselves, and if you weren't good enough, then obviously you moved on. But it was so quick the way he turned things around. I mean, I remember he brought Sam Ellis in and Dennis Booth. Sam was skipper at the time. And Sam, you know, the first thing Sam done on his debut was he give the centre forward a dig in the ribs with his, proper dig in the ribs with his fist. And some of the crowd were like, boo, we don't want your sort here. And it's Watford was an okay club, going nowhere club at the time. But that was the sort of steel that Graham Taylor brought into the club straight away. And he got a few more players in. And then obviously the standards and training and everything changed at Watford.
That was the one thing when Tom Wally came to our school. He said the thing about Watford, we're the fittest club in the league, and we always will be. And it seemed to be that thing that Watford were obsessed with fitness. Is that really what happened, or is that just a bit of mind games for the other teams?
No, we were very fit. I laugh at players these days that complain about playing two matches a week, because I always used to hate it when they only had one match a week, because if we only played once a week, guaranteed we'd be doing a cross country on the Wednesday. We'd be morning and afternoon running around pitch, doing circuits, a lot. So it was much, much better to have two games a week than only the one. But Taylor even brought us in. We played a match on a Tuesday, and he told us all, normally you get a day off the next day. He told us all we had to come in and report to the grounds. So we came in the next day and we're thinking we're just going to have a bit of a stretch and a massage or whatever. And as we came into the ground, the circuit was set up on the football pitch. And we're looking at it thinking, oh, that's got to be for the reserves. We just played last night. And so I get changed and went out of there. We've done a stretch and he puts through a circuit. We're going, what? And he said, look, you played 90 minutes yesterday. You train 3 hours a day normally, so what's the problem in going out and training the next day? And that's how he was, You never knew what to expect with Graham, and we was a fit side. We was very fit.
Get on to Elton John in a minute, but that just quickly, that high-tempo football reminds me a bit of what Leicester did a few seasons ago when they just went, right, let's play at 100 miles an hour let's play high-tempo football throughout 90 minutes. When that Watford team got the ball, they just, attacked. It was, people used to say it was the long ball game, but it was the hitting you and John Barnes, wasn't it? You on the right, John on the left, hurtling up the pitch as quickly as possible. They're always, people weren't used to it, were they, having to get back so quickly?
No, we played in a system where If you got injured and a reserve came in, they knew exactly what was expected of them. But we played balls in the channels. We weren't just a long ball team. We played balls in the channels where we could close players down. And basically, centre forward's first job was to cut the keeper off. And then me and John as wingers, our first job was to squeeze the fullbacks. And then obviously the midfield push up behind us. And 9 times out of 10, we'd win the ball back or get a throw in or something like that. And Graham used to have his games analysed. He analysed Liverpool's matches and stuff like that. And he said that 30% of the goals that you score are come from winning the ball back in the final third. So, you know, he was right about that. And if you watch Man City right now, Man City are very good at that. As soon as they lose the ball, they close it down and they win it back straight away. So a lot of it was controlled football. But, you know, Taylor said to us, me and John, he says, when you come off the pitch, it's all about shots and crosses. How many shots did you get in? How many crosses did you get in? And that's all your job's about. And it's same with the centre forwards, you know. It say to them, I want 15 goals per season from each centre forward. I want 10 goals from you, Callie, and I want 12 goals from you, John. And he said, if we get that, we'll have over 50 goals from your front four and we won't go down.
Hold on, why did you have to score 10 and he had to score 12?
Because I used to take more set pieces. So I was on the corners and free kicks. And obviously, John was very good on getting on the end of things. So he used to score more goals than me. So obviously, Taylor's average for me was somewhere between 8 and 12. And John's was between 10 and 14.
What I think was good about it, though, you boys, you just, when you got the ball, you ran with it, didn't you? I mean, it was just exhilarating watching you and Barnes going up the wings. I mean, just take players on. You know, Ferguson always had players who would take the defenders on. It's nice to see players dribble, isn't it? You know, Ronaldo, Messi, that's what we want to watch, isn't it?
I think it lifts the crowd. You know, the crowd love it. You can hear the crowd, the sort of volume go up when you're taking players on. They love it, you know. And it's just what we was taught to do, you know. You get the ball. For me, it was always about delivery. You know, if I didn't need to beat the player, I'd just get the ball in the box. Because at the end of the day, you're only taking the player on to get the cross in. So I was slightly different to John. John was very, very good at sucking players in and then just going past them and whipping the ball in. But we was two different wingers, but produced quality crosses and,
yeah,
you know.
What was that on John like then? Did he used to come and see you boys before the match in the dressing room?
Yeah, he's very good. Obviously, he was out of the country a lot. So when he was back in the country, I always tried to come to the games. And first thing he'd do, he'd go into the players' lounge and say hello to the families and, you know, wives, girlfriends. Then he'd come into the change room, say hello to the lads, and then he'd probably go into the director's box and get ready for the match. So he had a crack with the lads, I think. Like, you know, although he has called him Mr. Chairman, he you could have a crack with him and he liked a joke. And obviously, he sort of put certain events on, like we used to have a party at his house, a garden party before every season, which was his way of sort of getting to know some of the players that had joined the club throughout the season, and it was his way of sort of just giving us a fun day out, really, and it was brilliant.
He used to get so much stick off the Oppo fans. Do you think that affected him?
No, I don't think he cared, but he's had all them before, you know. And Elton just—he was a happy person at the club, you know. Yeah. He turned up at our Christmas party one year. Yeah, normally we have the Christmas party for the lads and the wives, girlfriends. And about a day before, I think it was at the Hilton in Watford, Graham Taylor said, oh, we've got a special guest coming tomorrow. And we said, oh, is that? He went, the chairman's coming. So it was brilliant because they've got some bands to do the entertainment. They've got a DJ there as well with his mobile disco. So everything has sort of gone well and it's getting quite late. The band are sort of packing away. A lot of the lads that got babysitters had to go home so the babysitters could go home. So there was only a handful of us left, really. Graham Taylor, Elton John, Jerry Armstrong, Pat Rice, me, John Barnes, the young lads. And we pushed two tables together, and we was all having a drink around there. And Pat Rice said to the chairman, he spotted a piano over in the corner. Well, a good one, it's a crappy old piano. So he said, come on, Elton, give us a song. Pat, he said, I'm at a party. I don't want to sing songs at a party. And he says, come on, Mr. Chairman. He said, me and your man here, Jerry, we've never heard you. So after a bit of, you know, ribbing, he said, okay, I'll do one song. So he said, what do you want me to sing? And Graham Taylor said, sing my favourite song, Candle in the Wind. So he got him and sung it. And the poor bloke ended up doing an hour-long concert.
Best set ever for you lot.
That's he's a really good laugh, Elton, he's.
Nigel, whilst I've got you, I remember times have changed in football a lot. They got a lot of money now. Wasn't so big in your day, was it? And I remember you used to have a car with your name on the side of it for a while, because you had a sponsored car. Because I remember turning up to a party, and everyone went, Nigel's in there. You were there, and the ladies were all looking at you because you were the pro footballer. We didn't get a look in.
They were looking at me thinking, what the hell is he doing that? He got me a sponsored car. Right, this is Graham Taylor. It was a mini Metro, not even a 1 litre. It was painted in yellow with red and black Go Faster stripes down the side, with Nigel Callaghan written all over it. I mean, it was so embarrassing. I gave the car back after a month. I turned up at Heathrow for the under 21s, and I pulled into the car park. I was in my mini Metro, and our rivals were Luton in them days.
Yeah.
Paul Walsh turns up in a Mitsubishi Colt Starion Turbo. So, I didn't get much stick over that calf, but we got the 21s.
Oh, that's brilliant. What are you up to at the moment? What are you doing?
I'm doing nothing. Obviously, I'm a DJ, and I'm in the hospitality industry, and basically, we just haven't been able to get back to work since last March. And the way it's going at the moment, just don't know when we're going to get back to work, you know. So, like I said, I started doing a music stream on Facebook way back in March, and you know, basically I thought I'd get Watford and Derby fans coming on probably, and we did get quite a lot, and now it's just grown and grown and grown, and it's a great stream. There's a lot of people on there, and it's been good. I've kept them going. It's been a lot of lonely people out there.
Where's the stream if people want to listen to it?
Just on Nigel Callaghan Facebook page.
Okay.
Type in my name, they'll get it. But there's been a lot of people have sort of said I've been isolated on my own, and sort of this is really sort of connecting me with other people and made new friends on here. And like I said, I've got people from all over the world checking in: Australia, China, Sweden, Switzerland, Norway, US of A, Barbados. I've had an offer to go over to Barbados to do a DJ set.
Take it.
It's been good because it's kept me going as well. I think I'd have gone stir crazy if I'd have been stuck in the house most of the time and doing nothing, because that's what it is at the moment.
Just quickly tell us, where do you DJ when it's all open so people can come and see you?
Well, I was DJing at a pub called the Neptune, which is a big Derby County supporters bar. So I was doing that. I was doing a little bit of work up in Blackpool and Manchester. Basically, I'd go where the work takes me, but for the last few summers, I've been doing a few gigs abroad in Corfu, and I've done a little gig in Switzerland during the winter. I've been getting about. It's just, I say it's just been a nightmare.
Blakey, you been to the Neptune?
I used to work at the Neptune. Yeah.
It's a good pub, isn't it?
Yeah, brilliant pub, proper Derby County pub. It's there's like turnstiles from the old baseball ground out the back and signed pictures and everything. It's like the Derby County pub, isn't it, Nigel?
I'm still waiting for him to put a picture of me up in there.
Nigel, it's been brilliant talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Cheers, Tim.
Nigel Callaghan there, obviously a Watford legend, obviously a Derby legend too, and Villa. Yeah. But Derby, he was big for Derby, wasn't he?
Yeah, he signed in the when we were in the second division and then got them into the first division, and he ended up finishing fifth in Division One in 88, I think. So yeah, he's a really, really big player and a good side for Derby.
More importantly, all the listeners want to know, what's he like as a DJ?
He's not bad. It's not my bag. It's a lot of Sweet Caroline and all that kind of...
Oh God, I just assumed it was house music.
No, it's all proper, like, hit that 60s, all the cheesy, the classic DJ.
He's a cheesy. I hope he hears this. He's going to come around and stove your head in, Blake.
He knows where I live as well. Oh, no.
Is it like a sing-along type thing?
Yeah, like a sing-along, all the classic hits, not cheesy, classic.
Brilliant. What, in a Derby pub? What's the song all the Derby fans love the most? Is there a signature Derby song, do you think?
We've got a song called Steve Bloom is Watching, which is sung by Robert Lindsay from My Family and Citizen Smith? He's an actor from Ilkeston near Derby, and he sings this anthem about Steve Bloom, who's a club legend from the 1800s. So he puts that on all the time and the pub goes mad.
A club legend from the 1800s. That is amazing. Right, Blake, it's numbers time. Break up the lettery. This week, as well as the lettery, is bought. This podcast is bought by the number. Blake, you go first. The number?
7.
Oh, okay. Kevin Keegan.
No. It's a topical one, if you want a little clue.
7. I really don't know.
With Tottenham and Man City facing each other in the cup final, after last night. In the previous 7 seasons, the League Cup has been won by either Pep Guardiola or Mourinho.
Oh, that's a good fact. That is a great fact.
So 2014, 16, 18, 19, 20 was Pep with Man City, and 2015 and 17 was Chelsea and Man United, Mourinho. And they face each other again.
But Josie's won it more than that, though, hasn't he?
So he has, yeah, but that's just the last 7 seasons.
All right, that's good. I like it. All right, my number.
Oh, here we go.
My number, and this is a pure coincidence, by the way, is 11. And I'm laughing, so you might get it from 11.
Oh, points. Derby County in the Premier League.
The fewest amount of points that anyone has got in the Premier League. I had no idea it was you.
Until this season.
Literally no idea that it was you, because I just thought, I'll just go for that this week. Well, who does have so Derby have 11, that's one, then Sunderland with 5th, that was 2007-2008. Did you go that season?
Went to every single game of that season.
Wow.
Home and away.
Okay, it's right. Okay, let's hit here. You beat West Brom 1-0, playoff final to go up. And then in the following months, the Rams, that's your mob, won just one throughout the entire campaign, picking up 8 draws and losing another 29 matches. 4 of your points came against Newcastle. Derby, you also hold the record for the fewest wins in the season, 1, fewest goals scored, 20, most goals conceded, 89, and subsequently the worst ever goal difference, -69. You hold the record for the most consecutive matches without a win, which is 32. And if you come up again and keep losing, it apparently carries on.
Yeah. So at the minute, I think Sheffield United are 18 games without a win in the Premier League. But because we won right at the start of the season, we did 32 games without a win or something ridiculous.
32. So who was manager then?
We had Billy Davis to start the season until about November. And then Paul Jewell came in the November for the rest of the season.
Right, okay. Disaster. Right, I've got 2 more E's and you've got 1 more E. Right, so let's get on with it. Here's a great E for you. You're going to love this. Electric Fences, 1985 season. Ken Bates, our chairman, decided that 84-80 season that it would be time to put up electric fences. Chelsea had gone on the rampage, Chelsea fans. There was a lot of football violence back in the 80s, Blake. It wasn't pretty. Luton, Derby. I think Chelsea smashed up Derby as well or something. I don't know. And Luton absolutely tore that apart. So he said it will be about 3 stands of barbed wire and it will be situated 11 feet off the ground. People may howl about it being dangerous, but it's been used in farming for a long time. touchy defence would immediately have to let go and fall 15-3. Put barbed wire above it as well. Can you imagine that, watching football? So he actually erected the fence, but he never switched it on. Well, one part of the fence. Bates appeared convinced that his plan had no flaws. There will be appropriate warning signs around the ground. I expect the vast majority of our fans, who are good law-abiding citizens, will be 100% in favour. The only adverse reaction will come from people who like to climb fences. I mean, I miss Ken Bates. He's a bit of a knob, but he did say some stuff which, I mean, there's humour looking back on the stuff he says. Luton chairman David Evans said, "My God, how awful. The next step will be SS helmets to his stewards." Be it Bill Gill or Gill from the Liverpool Supporters Club said, they do that with cattle, don't they? It just shows how Chelsea think of their fans. And then it immediately got nicknamed Goldits, which is quite funny. And then eventually they... Bates showed it off in 95, but then the GLC said, under general safety certificate issued at Stamford Bridge on February 13th, Chelsea cannot make alterations to the stadium regarding such things. So they basically banned it. And then Bates replied, "With all this sudden compassion for hooligans, why all this sudden compassion for hooligans? Just a few weeks ago, the whole nation was up in arms about these thugs attacking innocent people and driving them away from the game. Now there's all concern about a few soccer hooligans that might get their fingers burnt trying to scale fences at Stamford Bridge." So that did make me laugh. And whilst we're at Stamford, do you remember? You don't remember it. You weren't even born. But I mean, it's insane that we used to watch football through fences. Did you ever watch football through a fence?
No, never. I've only ever seen pictures and videos. And
every single, I mean, you go to Luton away, it was just like you were caged in. It was insane. There was just cages everywhere. All these grounds, you were just caged. It's so bizarre now to think about it. That was the glory days. What's your next D?
I don't know if you're going to think I'm very clever here or cheating, but it's 1857. So it's just still an E.
Okay.
And it's the date that the first ever football club was formed. Sheffield FC. They were formed under the Sheffield rules. So at the time, there was two rules. There was the Cambridge University rules and there was the Sheffield rules. So the first ever football club was Sheffield FC that are still going to this day, and they play in Derbyshire. So the first ever football team in the whole world play in God's County, Derbyshire.
I thought it's Notts County.
They're the oldest. I think they're the oldest team that are still in the football. Well, were in the football league.
Oh,
the
oldest, I see. Yeah,
because they play in the about step four or five of non-league, about four below the conference. And right. They're the only team. We spoke about Real Madrid being one of the biggest teams in the world earlier. The FIFA Order of Merit is given out each year to people in the game that have done well and have achieved stuff. There's only two football clubs that have been given it the FIFA Order of Merit: Real Madrid and Sheffield FC.
That's good facts. I love it. I love learning stuff like that. That's great. Did you go home and away to every match in that derby season?
Yeah.
What was it like going away? I mean, did you start off with like 10,000 away fans and then end up with like 30 of you? What happened?
It was packed every week. We treated it as a party. We used to be like, let's pretend we scored a goal. We went to like Anfield away, lost 5-0. Torres scored a hat-trick. We conceded 6 at Arsenal. We'd not scored an away goal until the end of December of the season, and we were 3-0 down at Man United, and there was 3,500 Derby fans all singing, "We only want one goal." And Steve Harwood somehow put it in the net, and I've never celebrated a goal like it, more than Wembley. It was just, we just treated it as, we knew we were down in November. So we went to Blackburn last game of the season, 6,000 Derby fans all dressed in Hawaiian clothing, partying that were going down.
I remember it.
Yeah, it was just, when you know you're down in November or December, we just treated it as, we were doing Mexican waves 4-0 down at home to Aston Villa when Petrov scored from the halfway line. It was just mental.
So would you say it was one of the best seasons ever for supporting Derby for you?
Yeah, in a weird way, because I kind of missed out the last time we were in the Prem because I was a little bit younger. I went to the Ottaway game, but to go to the Arsenals, Man United's, Chelsea's, Frank Lampard scored 4 against us at Stamford Bridge and we lost 6-2. And going to the ground, I mean, we were little old Derby and we were crap, but it was still nice to go to Chelsea and nice to go to Man United and nice to go to Tottenham. I'd never been to White Hart Lane. So, yeah, it had its good points, but on reflection, it wasn't very good at all, really.
Mate, we've nearly run out of time. Got any more E's you want to throw at us, or should we do the poll?
Should we do the poll?
So it was, let me have a look, see how we're getting on. What is the biggest game in club football? We've got El Clasico, we've got Liverpool versus United, and we've got Don't Care. What do you think? Which one do you think wins it?
I think El Clasico will just win, but I think Don't Care might be quite high.
Don't Care's won it. Don't Care's got 36%.
The podcast is ruined.
No, I don't think so. I think it's good. It leaves 64% to be separated between El Clasico and Liverpool versus United. And it's 32% each.
No way.
Yeah. So that's what's going on. So I'm just going to quickly click on it because there's lots of people. There's lots of comments here. So see if anyone have got any other things. Okay. Just loads of people saying it's Rangers versus Celtic, or it's the Merseyside derby, or Old Firm, or that is there. West Ham versus Millwall, Sunderland versus Newcastle. Everyone's just choosing Derby County versus Forest. Everyone's just choosing their local, aren't they, basically?
Yeah.
Oxford versus Swindon. Hey! El Clasico, there you go. Yeah, I don't know. So there's lots of stuff. Spurs versus Arsenal. Yeah, okay. All right, well, listen, that's it for this week's podcast. That's the end of the E's. Please, can you email us and let us know if you've got any F's? We've got a couple, Force 9. What else did we say? We could do Foul Throw. And there was
another Fantasy one. Football.
Fantasy Football. There's three we've already got, and we'll do some more as well. Blake, what's our email address? We got a new one now. We've
got a new one, yeah. lovejoyhour@gmail.com.
The or just Lovejoy?
Just lovejoyhour@gmail.com.
Lovejoy Hour, not even Lovejoy Hour podcast, just Lovejoy Hour.
Lovejoy Hour.
Perfect. Lovejoy Hour, or you can tweet me at Tim Lovejoy. That's it for this week's. We'll see you next week with the letter F and some more numbers. See ya.